Fed Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools. For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown. Through its Fed Talk series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia students and Georgia schools. Welcome to Fed Talks.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the second in our podcast series on the Title I Part A program. This is Craig Gear speaking, and joining us today, I'll go around the room, my colleagues.
John White with Federal Programs.
Sean Owen with Federal Programs.
Randy Phillips with Title I.
Ken Banter with Title I.
Very good. We're going to continue the conversation, as I mentioned, around Title I Part A, which is really one of the core programs of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. It is the largest federal education program in the country, so it's an important topic. So we're going to continue talking a little bit more today about how the funds are used and how students are supported through this important program. So I'll open it up for questions.
So either Ken or Randy, whomever, when we talk about this, and I know you touched on this a little bit in a previous podcast, but when you're talking about Title I-A, what students are served?
Well, as we mentioned in the previous podcast, we talked about the students that were identified to be served. And those come about through a district or really school level needs assessment, where they look at the needs and the performance of the different students in the school and how they might best be helped. And so that is the first step that a school must take, is to look to determine how the students are identified through their academic performance.
Hey, can I interrupt for a minute? And I think it's really important at this point, and you guys jump in. We haven't mentioned the fact that this program, Title I, as well as all federal programs, are called supplemental. So when you talk about doing a needs assessment, of course, you're doing a needs assessment about all of the needs of all students, but share a little bit more about teasing out how you're going to use the federal funds.
Well, as you said, the federal funds are all supplemental.
What does that mean?
It means that they must not replace what's required to be done with state and local funds. School systems get their state and local funds to be able to determine and run their schools, and should be able to run their schools with those funds. Federal programs are to be kind of like the cherry on top that gives the little extras that might help those students that need a little bit extra help. So as long as our funds are above and beyond what is necessary to run a school, which is what state funds are supposed to do, then federal funds are supplemental, and they're that extra little help.
So when districts are doing their needs assessment, either at the district level or the school level, that's really important to think about what are the extra things that are being identified as needs, and that's kind of where Title I, as well as the other federal programs we've talked about, would target their supports, right?
Correct.
Since they're trying to identify with Title I funds what students are academically in need to get these extra supports, in addition to their regular math, English, science, and social studies courses. So if they're struggling like in math, then they may provide additional after-school tutoring or during-school tutoring or something to help out those students that may be struggling with a specific skill.
Right. So actually, it isn't that we're going to replace the math instruction that's going on in the school, but the needs are identifying certain kids who have a deficiency in math, so it's about looking at
the supplemental
characteristics.
In fact, one of the things that can't happen is that Title I funds cannot be used to replace that regular math class. A child must attend their regular math class, and then anything Title I does has to be above and beyond that time frame. It sometimes can be built into the school day, but their regular math cannot be taken away.
And that's a good segue into our next question. Can you give us some examples of how funds can be used? What are some of the things that we might see if we walked into a school building that had Title I money?
We've already mentioned tutoring, either before or after school, but during the school day, a school may carve out some instructional time that's an increased instructional time. If I'm struggling in math, then I may go to this additional class to receive additional math support.
Like at high school, that might be an elective math class, that you had your Algebra 1 class, and you might have an elective class as well.
Designed specifically for my needs.
So So here's a question. We've talked a little bit about academic needs, math, English, language arts. What if through its needs assessment process, the school realizes that, gosh, our kids aren't, attendance is an issue. They're not in the classroom. Is there anything that Title I could do to address issues like that that aren't exactly focused on core content like English support, math support?
With the passage of the Every Student Succeeds Act, those doors have opened up quite a bit. Honestly, in the past, we were very much limited to academic support. But because of some things that have been added to the law now, Title I and other federal funds can be used to help with some of those things. Even emotional supports, we can talk about counseling, some different emotional, socio-emotional type activities that could be helped to get students to come to school, because obviously if they're not coming to school, they're not learning.
Right. They need to be ready to learn. So that could address social. Right.
So within Georgia's systems of continuous improvement, the middle of the framework talks about the whole child. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. There? Exactly. Mm-hmm. Reaching every aspect to help that child be as successful as they possibly can be.
If the school, here's another example, if the school has identified that student behavior is a high need for them, then they can earmark some of their Title I funds to address positive support, student behavior, positive interventions for behavior.
Right, you mentioned before as well that money can be used. Like if we would walk into a school, we might see some before and after school tutoring. And I think that's maybe a lot of our listeners might be connecting Title I funds to tutoring. But do all schools have to do tutoring? Do all schools use tutoring as a way to provide support?
The only requirement from Title I is that they have an instructional program. How they choose to do that instructional program is completely up to the school. They cannot obviously do just attendance. That would not be allowable with just Title I. They must
just
on attendance. They must have some kind of instructional focus to their program as well. And then the attendance things and such can be supplemental to those.
So like if the district identified that they had a gap in math, then they would have some math tutoring, some supports for math tutoring, but then another gap that they identified might be in attendance for certain kids. They could also do an initiative related to that.
Exactly.
Okay. And in addition, they could also address some of their funds for the teachers. If the teachers are struggling with math instruction, then they could provide like a math instructional coach to work specifically with the teachers. Or if they need additional math teachers, then they can use their Title I funds to reduce the class size within those math classrooms. So that they can provide a smaller class size to address the needs of those students better.
I'd like to tie this back to an earlier podcast we did on the parent engagement program under Title I. Parents and community members are a big piece of this work in defining the needs. Can you elaborate a little more on the role parents can play in helping schools identify needs?
It's interesting, and thank you for asking that question, because if a school district receives over $500,000 in a Title I allocation, then they must set aside 1% of that allocation for parent and community engagement.
So I will take this opportunity to plug that podcast, because that is a key component of Title I Part A's work.
And in fact, the parents are required to be a part of the planning process. Their input is very valued, and it needs to be, because we don't have, in the schools, we don't have the students all day long. They have the majority of the time. And so we need them to be communicating with the school as much as possible, so that the things that happen in school can carry on throughout the rest of the day, and the summers and all these other kind of activity times that kids are not in school. So the support we get from parents, if they can have that activity continuing and building up that educational process, then we're going to be ahead of the game.
And can't parents expect a Title I meeting each year?
Yes, they look forward to those meetings. They look on their billboards and they see them as they go by the school.
Share a little bit more about what's the purpose of the annual Title I meeting.
There is a Title I annual meeting, and it is required that they have this meeting to summarize what is the Title I program, how they're going to use their funds, how much funds does this school system school receive. How are we engaging you as parents through our Title I funds? how we are addressing these needs that we've identified at the school level.
So it's really kind of setting the stage for the year, right? They've gone through the needs mm-hmm. assessment process, they've built the plan, and now they're sharing it with the parents. Isn't that kind of, in essence?
Well, exactly. That there's not, at that time of the year, at that meeting, it is really a share meeting,
right,
where they share, this is what we're going to be doing. We've taken your input from previous meetings,
right,
and we've
right.
taken information from the student performance on their test scores and other academic measures the system has done. And then they put all that together to develop, this is the plan for this year. Later meetings will come up that they will continue and bring parents back to start developing the next year's plan. So it's a continuing cycle, just like our school improvement cycle. It never ends. It starts and then it restarts, and we evaluate and go forward.
So you mentioned that you see them on the marquees in the front of most Title I schools, that the annual Title I meeting is being held. It's not just for Title I parents. I mean, if a community member, a church organization, anybody wants to come to that,
yes, definitely. There's no limit at the door. You don't have to have any special pass to get in. But it's encouraged to have all stakeholders, because it is a community activity to have that school to be the best it can be.
And I'll point out that they are in our systems framework, that the system that talks about family and community engagement encourages the community to come in and for the school to reach out to the community, because everybody works with the kids.
And so does Title I encourage that
absolutely
collaboration among all the stakeholders.
And there's also a growth thing that has to happen as students move from elementary school to middle school to high school to college. Those transitions are tough, not only for the kids, but for the parents. And so Title I funds can be used as well to help those transition times, to help students get to the from one point to the next.
And to prepare those students for a post-secondary education.
And prepare the parents.
And it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, if you refer to our ESSA state plan, it specifically asks the state to address how is it using Title I funds to support transition. So I'm glad you guys brought that up. That's really important.
So we've talked about the services that can be provided, and I know that you probably have a number of other services that you could talk about, but one of the things that we questions that we hear are related to allocation. So how are the funds allocated? Who do they go to? How are they determined? Can you share some of that with us?
Sure. Well, Congress allocates the funds to all the states. And for Georgia, for FY19, this upcoming year, we have a preliminary allocation of $532 million, of which that will then be allocated to each of the school systems, or what we call LEAs, which is determined by their poverty and their census data. And there's a calculation that we run, just like Congress or the Department of Education runs, to determine what each state's allocation is.
And then once the LEA gets their funds, then they will look at their schools, look at their needs, look at their poverty levels in their different schools, and they'll rank order their schools and determine what schools they can afford to serve, just like anybody's home budget. You might not be able to get everything on your wish list, so they have to make priorities. They prioritize their schools, and they determine which schools would receive the funds from Title I, and then those schools are the ones that are be able to determine if they're school-wide or target-assisted, and then move into the and develop their programs through their plans.
And Randy mentioned rank order, and that rank order is based on the percentage of poverty at each school. And we have to serve the highest poverty schools most first, and then we go down that rank order list that Randy mentioned.
So the reality is you're probably going to run out of money before you're able to serve
right
every school, every child.
Yes, it's very, very likely, especially in our large school districts.
So, you know, you've given us a lot of information. Can you remind our listeners where they can go to find information, more information if they'd like to see?
Well, the easiest place to go to is the state website. You would just go to www.gadoe.org and look under federal programs. And then right under federal programs, you go on down and find the Title I Part A link, and you'll see all kinds of information with that.
All right. Well, thank you. That wraps up the second podcast in this series on Title I Part A, and we really appreciate you guys joining us today. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.